The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today
FM. John Gibbons, lots to talk about. Start with this claim that climate change is going to wipe out 20% of global GDP by 2050, which would mean dramatically lower standards of living for many people. What's the basis for that claim?
Good evening, Matt. Yeah, this is a new study from the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. And it follows ground that has been studied, I guess, by economists already. But here we're getting actual climate scientists involved in running the numbers and in plugging them into to the data that we know about already. And really what they've come out with, in a sense, Matt, it's sort of back to the future, because Nicholas Stern, who produced the Stern Report in 2006 for the UK government, he pretty much predicted all of this back then, which is nearly 20 years ago, but his predictions were largely ignored. And essentially what they've looked at is, what are the kind of median risks for the global economy out over the next 20, 25 years? And people often think, and especially I think in parts of the world like Ireland, that these kind of bad impacts, you know, they happen somewhere else. But what's clear from this study is that it's going to hit hard in major economies like the US, like Germany, like France. They're looking at, you know, double-digit reductions in GDP right across this. Now, obviously,
sorry, voters won't stand for that. They're not going to take it. That they're not going to engage in measures that they feel will reduce the economic output of their countries and their living standards.
Okay, sorry, I should explain, Matt. It isn't that climate measures are going to reduce their living standards. It's that climate impacts are going to wipe out vast amounts of the wealth in the world, right? Sorry, I probably should have clarified that. So the areas that are most vulnerable, of course, number one is agriculture. They're also looking at huge collapses in labour productivity. And in simple terms, that means many parts of the world, it's going to be too hot for people to work outdoors. That and the, one of the economic models have plugged the impact of that, and it's absolutely colossal. They're also looking at climate impacts on infrastructure. And the really, for me, the really alarming thing about this study is that the numbers that we're talking about here exclude the cost of damage caused by natural disasters such as storms and fires, which, of course, are also superfueled by climate change. So looking a little further out this century, their estimate is that that 20% rises quickly to 60% and, if you like, heads towards 100%. So it is very important to understand this is not the cost of dealing with climate change, as in this isn't the result of government measures to tackle climate change. This is the result of collapsing economies, crumbling food systems, breakdown in international trade and so on. And all of this is coming at us at 100 miles an hour.
Okay, but if we do the mitigations, will that then reduce this anticipated economic damage?
Yeah, we have choices, right? So they reckon in a best case scenario, we're looking by mid-century at climate change wiping out about $38 trillion, which is about 35 trillion euros annually off global GDP. Now, that's the best case scenario. That assumes, Matt, that we do all the good stuff, right? If, on the other hand, we don't do the good stuff, well, then those costs explode. And one really important thing, I think, to consider with this data is that, you know, oftentimes when we hear discussions about climate action, it's led by people taking the so-called economic view. We can't afford to do X. People won't put up with Y. Essentially, what this is saying is physics doesn't really care about your plans. This is going to happen. Now, the question, Matt, is do we try to stop it, or do we just lean back, have arguments about it, and let this thing destroy the economy? Because that's where we're headed.
Okay, there was a report in the Business Post today which has said that the IDA Ireland has complained that Green Minister Eamon Ryan is damaging Ireland's credibility amongst multinational companies, and it's about his stance on data centres connecting to the gas grid. This is because the data centres need a backup. If they can't get enough wind power, they can't get enough solar power, they need to have a connection to the gas grid to keep going in the event that they don't have the other sources of energy. So, damaging Ireland's credibility, we need these multinational companies, don't we? They provide the corporation tax revenues that provide the money for all the mitigation measures that you want.
Sure. Well, I guess the mitigation measures that we all need, right? I would say this comes from Michael Lowen, the CEO of the IDA. And the last time I checked, the IDA worked for us. In other words, they work for the government. They represent the state. So I find this a very unusual take from the IDA to be criticising government policy and saying, basically, we need to adjust government policy because it's not suiting the IDA and some of our international clients. That's not actually how politics works, Matt. How politics works is we set our targets, including things like climate targets, and then our state agencies work around those targets. So I find this particular intervention by the IDA completely out of order. They do not have the right or authority to be setting down policy for the government. And of course the IDA want to bend the rules so that their corporate clients from the US can have an easy ride through Ireland. I appreciate that is their job, but I do think they should also take full cognizance of our climate targets. And we already, just on this data center thing, we're already, I think it's 24%, if I'm correct on this, of the EU's data centres are currently located in Ireland, which for a country with a population of, 1% of the EU, we are already grossly over data centres.
But hold on, now, that actually can be a misrepresentation of the geographic considerations involved, that if you want to have data centres operating more efficiently and using less power, it's better to have them in the cooler temperate climate of Ireland than nearly anywhere else in the European Union. And in addition to that, for example, today Greencoat Renewables announced that it has signed a deal with two data centres to supply it with power. So they're putting in the wind energy to supply these data centres, which then do the things with AI and various other things which are going to help us deal with climate action in the future.
I know. I mean, I love this idea that AI is going to be the magic wand that deals with climate change.
Well, it's not just only AI. There's other things as well in relation to use of the internet.
I know. I think we need to take all of these measures with a large grain of salt. I mean, fine, we need data centres. Nobody's arguing that point. I take your point as well. We have a geographical edge. Not a unique edge, but we have an edge. But I still think we're already overrepresented. And the issue really, Matt, is here, we need to decarbonize our electrical grid. And we also have many other demands, whether it's from heat pumps to electric cars and the electrification of our industry. We cannot throw all of those plans onto the dump simply because the IDA want to bring in yet more foreign direct investment. We have lots of foreign direct investment. They do extremely well here through our tax system, through our English language, through our access to the European Union, and good luck to them. But we also have policies, and we should not allow the IDA tail to be wagging the government dog in this. And I really think they need to think very carefully about these type of interventions.
In fairness to the IDA, I have to say, the IDA actually asked for clarification in these documents from the Commission for Regulation of Utilities. And the IDA has been given a specific task by the government to bring in multinational companies, and then they will provide the jobs and the tax revenues. So I don't think it's a case of the IDA actually starting to dictate to the government. This is a question of the IDA looking to do its job to the best of its abilities. So it was another a couple of things I want to finish with. What do you make of Dublin City Council cancelling the €100 million plan for the Liffey cycle route? Another story that the Business Post has.
Yeah, incredibly disappointing. I mean, this plan was to basically really link us the whole way down the Dublin Quays and so on, and to give us that linkage, that connection, the joined up cycling network that the city is really craving. And it just seems, I'm not quite sure why they pulled the plug on it. The council apparently says there's a, quote, more cost-effective way of implementing cycling infrastructure. Apparently there is. The most cost-effective way of introducing cycling infrastructure is the rubbish infrastructure that we have now. It's really cheap, where, for example, you've got a couple of cycle lanes, they go along and suddenly, Matt, they disappear, or they run into a traffic light and you go, well, where are the cyclists supposed to go? That type of cycling infrastructure is cheap, yes, but it doesn't work, and it doesn't allow the kind of shift that, by the way, and I will stress this to listeners today saying, hang on, I'm a motorist, I don't care about cycle lanes. If we can get 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% of the population into cycling, which, by the way, has been done in Paris. It can be done if we can. That means that if you decide to stay as a motorist, guess what? You're going to have a lot more room on the road. So making space for cycling isn't about pursuing a niche for a certain number of people. It's about giving an active travel opportunity that benefits everybody. It benefits the public transport system, it benefits the public health, and it benefits motorists.
Yesterday we started the programme by doing the flooding in Dubai, and it's really interesting the debate that has broken out online in relation to this, because many people are saying that this extraordinary weather in Dubai, the heaviest rainfall that they have seen since records began in the 1940s, is caused by climate change. And then you have climate change deniers who are saying, no, it wasn't. What happened was this was the seeding of the clouds which caused all of this rain. Now, the authorities are denying that they have done any cloud seeding in the last week. This is where they basically send things into the clouds, salts, to try and actually force water out of the clouds. They say it didn't happen because they knew the rain was coming anyway, albeit more heavily than they had expected. What's the truth of what happened here, do you reckon, John?
Yeah, the cloud seeding, Matt, has become the new exploding EVs, right? It's the latest myth to sweep the internet. And I've looked into it, as a number of people have, over the last 24 hours. And number one, cloud seeding has been happening for probably several decades. It's not new technology. Your listeners may remember that the Chinese authorities even used cloud seeding to deliberately at the 2008 Olympics to deliberately make the rainfall divert away from Beijing, right? So cloud seeding is old technology. What it does is you inject silver iodide at high altitude, and the purpose is to trigger existing clouds to release their rain at a particular time. Cloud seeding does not manufacture clouds, and it doesn't manufacture rainfall. It's like a pin. Cloud seeding sticks a pin into a cloud and triggers it to rain. Now,
isn't that messing with nature, though, John? Isn't that bound to get you bad results?
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm not a big fan, as you probably know, Matt, of tricking around with nature. Now, the problem, of course, for countries like Dubai is that they're located they're located in the middle of deserts. So we're building cities in deserts. And guess what? They're desperately short of water. So they end up doing these really extreme measures. And you're absolutely right. When you start tricking around with nature, you get bad outcomes. But
And is that like what happened in the last couple of days? Is it because that the cloud seeding happened, that they got their floods, which they're now trying to deny it was the cause?
No. I mean, for example, meteorologists in the region have tracked this particular massive storm system. And it's not just in Dubai, by the way. It's right across the region. It's a huge storm system. They had tracked it for 6 days. There's no amount of cloud seeding that could possibly have accounted for a system of this scale. And I stress again, cloud seeding does not make rain. It simply triggers a particular cloud to release rain at a particular moment, and it tends to be very local and very small scale. What we're looking at here is a large, massive and catastrophic rainfall event. They reckon somewhere between a year and 18 months worth of rainfall falling in a 24-hour period. There is no amount of technology, thankfully, that can cause that amount of rain to fall from the sky at any one time. There is one technology, of course, Matt. It's called carbon dioxide. If we keep pumping it into the air, heating up the atmosphere, well, yes, we are doing our own geoengineering project, but it is not cloud seeding.
Thank you so much for being with us. John Gibbons, we'll talk to you again next week.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.